Welcome to Curated Advice on Better Living. Get different perspectives on personal development, like healthy habits, mindset, relationships, functional movement, and biohacking. If you're looking to improve your life, but you're overwhelmed by the endless sea of self-help content, you've found your new home. We'll talk to all sorts of people from other cultures, accessing different philosophies, real people's stories, and the lessons they've learned along the way. This is the Curated Advice on Better Living podcast. And now your host, Khaled Sultan.
Right now you're writing a web series and you've been spending a lot of time on your farm. Because if you think about good writers, famous people back in the day, a lot of them would go and isolate themselves in nature to write better.
No, honestly, I don't think it's about isolation or just removing yourself completely from society. I think as a writer or creative person, it's finding your own space where you can express yourself creatively without thinking about the boundaries that are being placed by society. I discovered the farm just by mistake. I just came out here with my dad one day and he went out for a walk and I just remained indoors. I was like, you know, I got nothing else to do. Might as well just start writing.
Okay.
And I don't know what happened with what came over me. It just all of a sudden, all these really great ideas start flooding into my head.
So how does this place differ than you've written scripts? You've done a lot of writing at home. And I remember there are periods of times where you were stressed out, you're busy, you're kind of isolated, and I knew you were in your creative bubble. How has coming here affected your writing as opposed to when you were back in the city or back home?
Well, least distractions, number one, because yeah. There's literally no internet here. That's the first one. Second one, I think I'm surrounded by nature and there's always something about nature that just brings inspiration. I can't really put my finger on it. You just feel more connected to the world and the environment around you. I might sound a little spiritual, but you know, it really is about finding that connection with the environment around you when it comes to writing and finding your own personal freedom.
We took a tour around the farm. You showed me around and there's something so beautiful about just going on that adventure. Like, I didn't know what to expect. There were the goats. We fed the goats and then the chicken and the ducks that we were walking.
Right.
And the air was beautiful. And I think
it was really clean.
I think that's not something to disregard, like whether it affects your writing or not. It affects your mood, affects the way you feel.
See, that's the thing.
Nature and fresh air.
See, here's the thing. It's just, I mean, when it comes to writing, it does not necessarily, you don't necessarily be, you know, connected to nature or whatever. You can be sitting in a coffee shop. You can be connected to your environment around you. Maybe the smell, the aroma of of the coffee shop, the people walking by, the sound of the coffee machines. Just like, it's just, it could be that. I mean, J.K. Rowling wrote her novel when she was in a coffee shop, you know?
Yeah.
She didn't really need to go out into the farms of, like, you know, the UK and just find inspiration, I say, from her.
No, if you're in a situation when you're in a city and you're disconnected from nature and everything else, that's going to influence your art. You know, your head might be, you're longing for that connection, but you're expressing it through your art.
Definitely. I think what is also important as a writer is to also write as if no one's ever going to read it and focus on the things that I know. I don't want to produce or talk about stories or situations that I have no knowledge about. And I think that was my mistake when I first started writing, when I started writing stories. I would honestly write stories that had nothing, were not related to me, and I cannot even relate to them. Like, my first script was about a white guy in Brooklyn. And I don't know why. I think that's the first thing that came to mind.
It's a white guy in Brooklyn.
And I don't know why. Don't ask me why Brooklyn. I liked New York at the time. And I was like, why not?
But it just seems very Hollywood.
Yeah. Yeah. You see, it's because of Hollywood movies. You know, we grew up watching Hollywood movies. And, you know, I didn't really see someone that looked like myself as a lead character.
No, there were hardly any representations of people in the Middle East. And the ones that were, you know, mind you, this was after 9/11, they were not favorable.
Exactly. So naturally, my first instinct was to write a story with a white leading man. I thought, I'd even question it. That's just something that just, it was an impulse that came to me. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the story I'm going to write. And it's not until years later where I actually developed as a writer and began understanding that the stories that I have are also worthy of telling and have value. My screenwriting professor, Sue Pack, shout out to her. She always keeps talking about, you know her.
Of course.
She always keeps telling me, write what you know. And it's so funny. I didn't understand
she
what
did
the hell
say
she,
that.
Yeah. I don't understand what the hell she meant back then.
Write what you know. She would always say that.
And then when I wrote about this white guy in a short film, yeah. You know, but has three personalities. Anyways.
That was the only screenwriting class I took. It was nice to get to know how scripts are written, how they're structured, how they're basically instructions for a director.
There's something very freeing as like when it comes to writing a story, you're putting a piece of yourself in it and it might not be a direct like autobiography of your life. It could be, how can I take this thing that happened to me that hurt me and put it in a really crazy genre, like in a horror or like in an action movie or a comedy, you know? I love that.
Dude, I mean art imitates this is very life. Philosophical. Yeah, exactly. Because you have to live to create art. Artists can't just create art. Even if you think about writers, they have to go and live and experience things so they can have something to write about. They have to go take a walk. They have to decompress. You can't always be with your work. You have to, you know, produce the art or write for 2 hours or 3 hours and then you need to go live. You need to go walk around, exercise, move, interact so you can regain the energy to produce art. What are the ways you utilize things like tactics, habits to motivate you or to get you to keep doing this consistently, not lose motivation?
Right. I actually, one thing that helps me a lot when I don't feel like writing, when I just feel like, you know what, I don't feel like to write today. I don't want to sit and stare at a screen or a script. I just go ahead and do something else. And I'm like, okay, what else can I do now? There's some presentation I have to prepare for work and maybe I want to do that. Or sometimes I don't even do that. Sometimes I just feel like going to a mall and I'll go to a mall. That way, to me, I feel like I let go of the guilt that I have to stay and write or else I'm not going to be successful and everything's doomed for me. I try to let go of that.
Bear in mind, we've gone on a road trip to get here. We've explored the farm. We went to this creepy cave the farm. Yeah. It's insane. Like as we were going in, I'm like, dude, I don't get nervous a lot, but that place was freaky, man.
That was scary.
We literally were going through, you could hear bats. The floor was full of onions. And I don't know why. Like me and him are speculating. Could it be like
a satanic cult?
My theory, he says satanic cult. My theory is the workers are superstitious and they must have walked past there and heard some voices. So they're like, oh, well, onion is the cure for demons.
Or they're all part of a satanic cult and they did that to protect their witch.
And there was a little egg.
Oh, dude, no, it's so scary. Because I was wearing flip-flops, right? Yeah. And there's a prick.
I can't believe you wore flip-flops to that cave. You know, I wouldn't have gone through with flip-flops, so.
I went in with flip-flops. So then I bled a little. What
took
if
a few tweaks to the toe.
What if my blood fell on the ground and then my blood got connected with the witch and now I might be possessed and might actually come over here and kill you later tonight?
Maybe. What about that egg? But you know what?
Dragon's egg.
Like that would be a great location to film a horror movie. When you found out you wanted to pursue acting, when you decided, okay, I'm going to give this a go, did you find you had unrealistic expectations in the beginning? Like you thought it was a lot easier than it was? And what changed that?
Oh man, it was up and down. Well, first of all, when I realized I wanted to pursue acting, I think I was like 9 years old. When I watched Macaulay Culkin in Home Alone, I looked at him and I was like, wow, like kids can do that. I mean, I wanted to do that so bad. And this is when I knew that this is what I wanted to be the rest of my life. I didn't really start working on it until I was about 12. That's when I got into like school plays. And sometimes these plays would never get made. Like we'd go through the rehearsals and like we'd practice, but like there's no final performance.
When people start out pursuing something creative, let's say they want to be a leading Hollywood actress or whatever it is, number one hip hop artist. Do you find like a lot of people think it's a lot easier than it actually is and they don't realize that it's a process and this is a craft, whether you're a stand-up comedian, whatever it is, and there's going to be a lot of failure on the way and it's a process?
Definitely. I think when I first started it, I always thought about the end result. You know, I would go to acting classes and I would try to meet with casting directors and I'll always say, man, like it's not working. Like, come on, I want it now. I was in such a hurry because it has such unrealistic expectations of what it takes to be an actor.
The only roles in Hollywood during the 2000s for people from that background was unfavorable. Terrorists or the villain in movies. And has that influenced you wanting to pursue acting and no matter what you do, that's all you'll amount to?
And I was offered to play terrorists, but I completely...
Were you?
I was.
Tell us the story.
Okay, so I was...
We're not skipping this.
Okay. So I was taking acting classes and I was offered like a terrorist role.
In LA.
So I told my acting coach about it and I was like, I don't want to do it.
You were actually offered a role. What was this for?
So was it for a TV series? I told my acting coach, I don't want to do it, you know? And he was like, you're crazy. You're really crazy. You have to go there, you get to meet the director, you get to know the director. The director will get to know who you are.
And he's kind of right.
Let me say, okay, he's kind of right, but let me tell you this.
You should have played that terrorist.
And 50K for the role.
They offered you 50. Hold on. It was a series for what?
Sorry, no. I'm sorry. 5K, 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 5K.
5K, okay.
Yeah, sorry, not 50K. I'm sorry.
Okay, 5K.
That was a TV series. CSI, one of those TV series.
I had a feeling.
Yeah, but I don't really remember what it was. Because that was like 4 or 5 years ago. So I said no to it. And my agent was telling me that I was crazy. Yeah. And my acting coach told me I was crazy.
From their perspective, you are crazy.
Yes, but here's the thing. They told me about, you know, they were telling me about how... It was a good, you know, opportunity for me to meet the director so I can get more opportunities to audition for his other stuff or introduce me to other people that know I could be good for their stuff. Yeah. But I did not want to meet the director dressed up as a freaking terrorist and him getting to know me as a terrorist actor. That's not what I wanted. I am a talented actor. I know who I am. I know I can embody many different characters. I have a lot more to me than terrorists.
I've seen it. I remember going, you were doing basically acting classes with this very well-known acting coach and you guys were actually working on a series that's going to be in Dutch TV.
Yeah.
And remember when I came and I saw you perform all these different roles that you
Richard
had?
Richard III. Yeah, I remember.
Richard III and God knows what. Man, that was, you were pouring your heart out, man. It was like witnessing art. It was witnessing something that someone has been working on.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I take it seriously, honestly. And when I really started taking it seriously was actually when I was like in LA, taking acting classes. Because I did have this unrealistic idea where I was like, I'm going to be an actor. I'm going to be in LA. I'm going to get an agent. And within 2 years, I'll be a well-known leading actor in a big Hollywood movie. And it, you know, it's just a reality hit. It's just like, no, this is a craft. There's discipline to it. You know, you have to be consistent. You have to get to know what kind of actor you are. What kind of, what are your strengths? Are you good in comedy? Are you good in action, horror? Like where do you fit within those genres? I mean, just like we mentioned before, art imitates life, right? Where people gain inspirations from everywhere. You know, it could be 50 years old and you could still find a lot of roles out there for you. 60, 70, you know, there're going to be projects that will want you.
Writers, for example, they peak in their 30s or even later. There's a process to it.
And we spoke about this, you and I, where we said that, you know, we're so happy that we're actually finally doing this, the podcast.
We've been talking about it for a while. On the radio, I was doing an interview show. I didn't have much creative ownership and there was a process to selecting guests. And it was mostly based on followers and influencers and blah, blah, blah. Some of them were great. You know, some people were great. Not all of them. Now that I'm doing this independent podcast, I can choose to bring whoever I want. I don't need to get it approved by somebody. And I don't care if they have social media or not. I'm having a conversation with you and I'm learning something and it's an exchange. You have to enjoy it.
Exactly. You creating this podcast and saying, I can have whoever I want. Like, I don't care it's never going to have to be approved by someone else.
I'm on a quest to find the most important things on how to live a better life. I'm trying to pick up habits, learn skills, mindset, attitudes, philosophies. And so what do you feel like your advice would be, whether it's to yourself, to other people? What's your advice on how to live a better life?
For me, meditation helped me a lot. You know, it helped me calm myself. It helped me to really stop overthinking and overanalyzing. I spent the entire past quarantine really just working on myself. I saw a therapist. I decided to do many different kinds of meditation. Some like were on YouTube, there's self-guided meditation. And, you know, I enrolled in, well, I did not enroll. It was in Headspace in the app. So they have this course where they teach you how to meditate without any guidance, shut your own mind and do your own technique and just really.
So there's no like voice, it's not a guided meditation?
Yeah, it's not a guided meditation.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've only ever done guided meditations.
And they're good. Honestly, I recommend them for anyone who's starting because you'll be able to initially, like slowly learn how to let go of your thoughts and just be present in the moment.
But to do that, you have to focus on the voice. So you have to focus on something.
Yeah. So meditation, working out, it sounds cliche. Honestly, it sounds really cliche.
But it's true. But
it's true,
it
though.
Works.
Like, honestly, it's true. It, like, that's, there's no magic formula whatsoever. It's simple. But a lot of people think because it's simple, it's not effective. But the truth is, it's simple, but it's hard. It's hard to maintain. You know, you have to be disciplined. Going to the gym, you know, meditating, being active, and just finding what you love. And stop caring what other people think.
It does sound cliche, but these are facts. I mean, I know it, you know it, and a lot of people we know it. And I'm not saying we're all very super disciplined and we do it, but regular exercise, meditation, like you said, just based on meditation, if someone wanted to start, what would you recommend for them?
Honestly, I would say start with Headspace, the app. It has a lot of good options. They have like a 5-minute one, a 2-minute one, just in case, like, you know, if you're busy, if you don't have time. Yeah, there's a quick like 1 or 2 minutes out of your time, out of your day, just to do a good meditation, just calm your mind and move forward.
On the way here, you know, it was a long trip to get to your farm.
Yeah.
Mind you, all the detours and our stop at McDonald's, it took us nearly 2.5 hours. So in that time, we did some unintentional character development.
Yeah.
And you shared a character with me that, man, it resonated with me.
Judy Canada.
Please tell us about Judy Canada.
Judy Canada actually was inspired by a situation that happened in QF that I don't think I should get into. Do you want me to get into it? I can get into it if you want to.
It's up to you. It's your choice.
All right, cool. Well, and, you know, there's a professor in UQ who was given a grant for $700,000, and everyone who on Twitter probably might know this story, and it was inspired by that. I said, holy shit, this is hysterical. This is actually funny if it was a comedy. So basically, it was inspired by that. And Judy Canada is inspired by the professor that was in the middle of this scandal. So she is a white woman in America. Well, she's in Doha, from America.
You could say that because you're a person of color.
I can say it. Exactly. So her name is Jocelyn Mitchell. So Jocelyn Mitchell.
Okay. You didn't have to name her. I'm just letting you know that. Like, that was a choice.
Did I fuck up that when
this story is public? I mean, this story is everywhere. Everybody knows
who she is. Yeah, Jocelyn Mitchell. Like, everybody knows
her. Yeah.
So we actually, she came up with this ridiculous concept of the female majlis years ago. And everybody was just had like WTF written all over their face.
Okay. For those of people that don't know, majlis is like kind of like what the man cave,
yep.
And a lot of the
to put it in American perspective,
where the guys get together, have coffee, whatever, watch TV, and just shoot the shit.
Basically, she was like, "Oh, let's. I'm going to come up with a concept for a female Majlis," and she named it Majlisia, which is the name of the first episode of my web series. She basically put her white woman perspective on the Middle Eastern culture, where she tried to sensualize it and make it seem something that it's not, and apparently the students keep telling her, like, you can't do that. That is not part of our culture. And she used to say something like, oh, I know you guys don't have a proper female role model. And everyone was like, excuse me, my mom's a doctor.
The problem is she's coming into it with her own skewed perspective.
And she's been in the country for, I think, over 10 years.
She's not coming in with an open mind, is what I'm trying to say. You dig me?
No, she's coming with the perspective like, I'm going to come here. I'm going to change you.
You got to be open to perspectives. You can find ignorance everywhere. It could be someone going to Europe or more like westernized society and being closed-minded, or vice versa, someone coming to a more conservative society and forcing their, you know, their views. Life is more complicated than that. I learned that. There's places where I don't agree with things. It's just the reality. You take the world as it is, you go where you want to go.
Exactly. I don't understand those people that try so hard to change someone else's mind. Like when two people disagree on something, like I don't understand why all of a sudden they're enemies to each other.
People get violent. People get tribal over different ideas and ideologies. And it's like, well, if we can't sit and listen to each other, exchange knowledge, never think you're better than someone else. Everybody has something to offer. Everybody has something to bring. I mean, human beings are tribal by nature.
True.
Man, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, dude. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
You've been listening to Curated Advice on Better Living. It's our passion to interview guests on their experiences to bring you different perspectives on personal development, on everything from healthy habits to mindset to relationships to functional movement and biohacking. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we hope you've gotten some information that can change your mindset. Make sure to like, rate, and review the show, and we'll be back soon. But in the meantime, We'll leave you with this from Bruce Lee.
Be formless, shapeless, like water. Now you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.